Good morning, everyone. The Justice Appropriations Subcommittee will now come to order. Amora, please call the roll.
Chair Plakin.
Here.
Vice Chair Caruso.
Here.
Ranking Member Gottlieb is excused. Representatives Beltran.
Here.
Benjamin.
Present.
Byrd.
Here.
Davis.
Here.
DeSegley.
Here.
Fernandez Barquin. Garrison.
Here.
Gregory.
Here.
Learned.
Here.
Mello.
Here.
Rayner.
Here.
Sabatini.
Here.
A quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Maura. Welcome, everyone, to Justice Appropriations. As a reminder, please follow the COVID-19 mask protocols in the House. And it requires anybody speaking before the committee to essentially have everybody have a mask on at all times. Also, please make sure cell phones and other devices are on silent as normal. And we'll go ahead and get started. Today, we're going to consider one PCB, proposed committee bill, followed by my budget recommendations for fiscal year 2021 and 22. After the budget recommendations, we have three member bills we'll be taking up. So without further delay, let's start with the PCB. I'm going to now pass the gavel to Vice Chair Caruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. We will now consider the proposed committee bill PCB-JUA-21-01, Judges, by Representative Plakin. Representative Plakin, you are recognized to explain PCB.
Thank you. The Supreme Court issued order number SC-20-1668, December 3rd, 2020, certifying the need for one additional circuit court judge and two additional county court judges. The PCB establishes one new circuit court judgeship in the 14th Judicial Circuit. It also establishes three new county court judgeships, two in Hillsborough County and one in St. John's County, at the request of Representative Stevenson. The bill required an additional eight positions and approximately $1.3 million of recurring general revenue funds for the state court system, which would be provided in the proposed 2021 and 22 House General Appropriations Act. That's the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Any amendments? There being no amendments, members, any questions? Representative Beltran, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chairman, and thank you, Chairman Plakin, for this good bill. Just have two questions. One is, just want to be clear, we're authorizing two additional in addition to the four that we authorized last year. Is that correct?
You are recognized.
In Hillsborough County, sorry.
You are recognized, Rep. Plakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure last year, I know there was a group of judges that were authorized under statute, but the line item was vetoed by the government. So I'm not sure. So if they were in last year's budget but unfunded, I believe, would that be correct, that it would still be, this would restore essentially restore that funding and add two judges.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if I understand you correctly, Chairman, the intent is to indeed fund the four from last year that we're going to fund the four seats last year that we authorized, but the funding was vetoed. We're also going to fund these two, referring to the Hillsborough County County Court seats. Is that fair to say?
Representative Plakin.
There will be six, four plus two.
You are recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Chairman. Last question. Just want to be clear that it's the intent of this legislation, being that we're authorizing new judgeships or funding them in a non-election year, that all these seats will be filled by appointment. I just want to confirm that, please.
Representative Plakin, you are recognized.
That's correct.
Members, any other questions? There being no other questions, public testimony. There is one. Jason Welty from Florida Clerks of Courts Operations Corporation. Okay. You're a proponent of the bill. Okay, that ends public testimony. Any debate? Representative Beltran, you are recognized.
For bringing this good bill We've had a problem in Hillsborough County for a long time. We were recommended for 4 county court judges, and the legislature hadn't acted on that for many years. Last year, we authorized the 4 in conformance with the Supreme Court's then recommendation, but unfortunately, we were not able to get the funding last year, so we remained, those 4 seats remained vacant. Since then, the Supreme Court, as the chairman's noted, has authorized or recommended 6 seats, and now we're authorizing them all and we're funding them. So very gratified. I know our chief judge has been concerned about this for a long time, and I'm really glad that the legislature, particularly in a year like this, is committed to fully funding our judiciary. So thank you all, and hope we have your support. Thank you.
Thank you, members. Any other further debate? There being none, Representative Plaikin, you are recognized to close on the PCB.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yes, we are, we consider fully funding the judiciary, and there has been a need in Hillsborough, St. John's, and Supreme Court certifications, the other, the 14th Circuit, for example. There has been that need. And some of this is reflection that right now you've probably heard or seen and somewhat reflected in our budget where the court system is clogged up, if you will, which has led to a lot of other parts of our budget to be delayed. So this is in anticipation of a uptick, maybe a significant one, of cases coming at the end of the pandemic. So with that, I close.
Thank you, Representative. And with Representative Plaikin having closed on the bill, Amara, will you please call the roll?
Chair Plaikin? Vice Chair Caruso?
Yes.
Representative Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Byrd?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin? Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
13 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
And with the favorable vote, the bill passes. I will now turn the gavel back over to Chair Plaikin.
All right, well, thank you, Vice Chair Caruso. And at this point, I'm going to please present you my proposed budget recommendations for the 21-22 budget, as well as supplementary recommendations for immediate reductions to funding provided in the Fiscal 2021 General Appropriations Act. The reductions to fiscal year 2021 funding were based upon the review of the governor's 6% holdback plan and represent one-time non-recurring reductions for administrative and operational funding that should not have a negative impact to department operations for the remainder of the fiscal year based on anticipated expenditures. These non-recurring reductions will be restored in the department's operating budgets as we begin the next fiscal year on July 1st. As public servants, we're called on to make good and sound decisions on the use of valuable taxpayer dollars and to be good stewards of the available funds we're tasked with appropriating. With the budget recommendations we'll be presenting today, that's what I've tried to do. As I mentioned earlier, the funding I recommend providing belongs to the people of Florida, and as chair, I have been dedicated to make sure the services and needs of the people of the state are met and ensuring that each dollar is used as efficiently and effectively as possible. The Justice Appropriations budget totals $5.7 billion this year, representing an increase of $106.6 million, or 1.9% over last year's budget. It's $4.8 billion in general revenue and $890.7 million in trust funds. It included 47,039 positions. With the additional funding resources available, we'll be able to address critical issues in various areas of the budget. The description of each of the issues are on the spreadsheets presented today. And rather than going through line by line, I'll just be focusing on some of the highlights today. We'll start with the Department of Corrections, which, if you look, is somewhere in the order of half of our budget and the large majority of the employees. So for correction officer recruitment, retention, and training, which has been an important issue, we have $18.2 million in general revenue funds and 230 positions provided for year 2 of a 4-year transition to the 8.5-hour shifts for correction officers in state-operated correctional institutions, and to provide enhanced delivery of basic recruit training for newly hired correctional officer trainees. Additionally, due to the current and future inmate population projections, and as a way, innovative way to try and assist the department with correctional officer pay and retention issues, my budget recommendations will include proviso language, which will be rolled out soon, authorizing the department the option, strictly on a voluntary fashion, to develop a comprehensive plan for the consolidation of two state-operated institutions and to provide a plan for the redirection of any identified cost savings to provide correctional officer salary increases to assist with attrition. Next, critical maintenance and repair projects and facility improvements. We provided $21.9 million of non-recurring general revenue funds to address critical life safety maintenance and repair issues at facility improvements at state operated correctional facilities, and we talked about that at a previous meeting. On staffing to support statutory changes, $4.6 million of general revenue funds and 47 positions are provided to address investigative and human resources workload related to the 180-day requirement to complete internal compliant investigations as codified into statute by the passage of Chapter 2020-104 on Florida statutes. Next area, security enhancements in critical transport vehicles. We'll provide $3 million of non-recurring general revenue funds to purchase critical security enhancement equipment statewide and to replace mission-critical motor vehicles that meet or exceed replacement standards based on age, mileage, and condition. Next, expansion of education programs. $1 million of general revenue is provided to contract with technical and state colleges and industry training programs to expand career and technical education programs. And that'll complete that section of our budget. Next, we'll move on to Department of Juvenile Justice. It has $4.5 million in funding to address the reprocurement of the healthcare contract for detention services, $2.6 million of non-recurring funding for critical maintenance and repair projects for their facilities. And then next, the Department of Legal Affairs, Attorney General's Office, basically, $50 million in trust fund authority for the Federal Victims of Crime Act assistant grant program to allow the distribution of federal funds to sub-grantees to aid victims of crime. Be providing $2 million in trust fund authority to address increased cost and litigation expenses associated with antitrust and complex court cases, $2 million in recurring funds to continue licensing and maintenance of the IT modernization project. Next, we'll move on to FDLE, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. We have $11.5 million in general revenue funds, of which $6.3 million is pass-through funding to local agencies for systems remediation to continue the transition to incident-based crime reporting to remain compatible with the FBI's National Crime Reporting System. $11.1 million general revenue and trust fund authority to continue implementation of the Uniform Arrest Affidavit and Criminal Justice Data Transparency Initiatives, and $5.9 million of non-recurring general revenue and trust fund authority we're providing to correct ADA deficiencies and code compliance issues at the Tampa Bay Regional Operations Center, as well as authorized pass-through tenant broker commissions for the Pensacola Regional Operations Center. Next, the Justice Administration Commission, or for the entities within, you might say. Approximately $736,000 of general revenue funds and 12 positions are provided to the Office of Guardian Ad Litem to address workload-related representation of children under the jurisdiction of the Dependency Court. For the state attorneys and public defenders, additional trust fund authority is provided for unique issues requested by the office to the extent it's available and projected revenues support the request. Approximately $215,000 of general revenue funds are provided to address increased building rental costs for the capital collateral regional capital collateral regional councils, as well as the criminal conflict and civil regional councilors. We've provided for a realignment of, this is to the state attorneys, we've provided a realignment of funding and positions for state attorneys with reassigned death penalty cases to the Ninth Judicial Circuit. And that'll complete that section. We'll go lastly to the state court system. We're providing $4.9 million of general revenue funds and 30 additional positions for 9 additional county court judges and 5 additional circuit court judges and associated staffing to provide the funding for judgeships authorized in Chapter 2020-112, as well as the judges being established in the PCB we just heard per the Supreme Court certification orders from 2019 and 2020. And again, some of the movement on judges is reflecting what we believe is going to be a backlog that will soon be released. So in summary, the budget funds 319 new positions and transfers 109 positions to DCF and reduces 35 positions subcommittee-wide, of which 34 have been vacant in excess of a year. So we have 47,000 positions, and we've only cut 35, and 34 of those were vacant positions for multiple years. So it represents an overall net increase of 175 positions across our jurisdiction. The net increase in positions is primarily a result of additional positions within the Department of Corrections to address the transition to 8.5-hour shifts, provide increased correctional officer training capacity, and additional investigative and human resources staffing. The budget includes $40.6 million in reductions, primarily with the elimination of excess budget due to reduced workload, a transfer of children's legal services from legal affairs to DCF, vacant position reductions, and contract cost savings as a result of a decline in the population of juveniles currently being served. I want to thank some members, you know, they've reached out to me, and for your participation and for your service to the committee, which is obviously a very important part of our state budget. As I mentioned at the start, as public servants, for us to be responsible and make good and sound decisions with taxpayers' money. And I'm confident that this budget that we'll be presenting, I'm presenting today, reflects those beliefs of being good stewards of the very valuable taxpayer money. Thank you, and at this point, Adam and I and the rest of the staff will be happy to answer any questions anyone has. Representative Benjamin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious as to whether the new judgeships go that we're funding.
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Where are the new judgeships going that we're funding?
Okay, the county court judges, there's 2 in Hillsborough, 1 in St. John's, and the circuit court judge is the 14th in the panhandle. And the 2 additional county court judges from last year are Hillsborough County.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Representative Lerner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And can you point me to the line number where you were talking about the reduction of 2 facilities?
I'm sorry, the reduction of?
I thought I heard you say you were contemplating the reduction of 2 correction facilities.
That is not in this right now. That will be proviso, which we'll be releasing in the next couple of days. That essentially gives the department the option to close 2 facilities, but not the requirement. So the overall idea is the prison population is down right now. from a high of about 93,000 to just under 80,000 detainees. So the concept is we'll give the department flexibility to use some of these, at least right now, funds to address what's a pretty serious problem in the prison system is correction officer pay. So it's the option but not the requirement, and it'll involve the department submitting to us to a plan, if they chose to go that route, a plan on how that would, what that would look like, rather than, for example, just putting it in the budget and say closing by July 1st. We just don't think that that's a very prudent approach. In fact, I would consider it imprudent. You recognize?
I think I completely understand what you're saying, and from everything I've heard from the department and the prisons I've toured, the crisis in staffing is, you know, I think comes up in every conversation. I think my fundamental question with the reduction is, in other parts of the budget, you mentioned the court backlog and all of our reduction in inmate numbers so far. One, when I asked Secretary Inch here, he said that he didn't get a good cost savings from the reduction because he does have to maintain these extra facilities. And so I understand the premise. I guess the question is, since we haven't changed any of our sentencing rules or made any or done any early release efforts, don't we expect our numbers to return to pre-pandemic levels once we get past that bubble? And would making facility reductions be prudent because of that?
Well, to go to the 93,000, for example, the projections are is that's over a period of, could be 5 years. I don't quote me exactly, but it's multiple years to hit that. And I would say there's a few factors. First of all, the legislature in the past number of years has passed a handful of criminal justice reform things, or perhaps, and I'm not sure that that's a big issue, but what this budget does is it gives them the flexibility. Now, in the meantime, Secretary Inch has closed, I think, 108 of over 700 dorms within the facilities, and I think that they just recommended, or they're actually looking at even more. So within the facility, they're closing off certain areas if that population is down. So I think the question is, do you continue closing dorms, or do you close a facility or two? And we're our approach is going to be working with the secretary on what's the most prudent approach going forward that makes sure that, first of all, people are safe and that it's economically feasible.
And one last follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
You recognize?
As it relates to the staffing shortage that you articulated and we've heard about, is it the reduction, is the shift to the 8.5-hour shift where we see how this committee is prioritizing, like the staffing, is it, would everything be in that line item as far as like the new positions, or is there anything else that I missed?
There is a line item in there for the cost of the 8.5-hour shifts, and I think it was $4.9 million, or I don't recall, but it's not a giant number to go to the 8.5-hour shifts, and so this is something that I visited Wakulla a few weeks ago, and talked to a number of, I think they had all 57 wardens there. And they seem confident in this approach of going to the 8.5-hour shifts, and most of them believe that this will help in the retention officers. There's a lot of factors relating to the retention issues, but they believe that that's one of them. Let me correct. That's about $17,413,851 is the cost for 8.5-hour shifts. Any other questions from members? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chair. You mentioned that there are 319 new positions headed to DCF. Correct.
I'm sorry, could you restate that question?
I thought I heard you mention there were 319 new positions headed to DCF.
There's actually, I believe, 109 positions being transferred from the department to DCF for Children's Legal Services. Mm-hmm. And so that's a wash. It's just a transfer of that function, I think, for Hillsborough and Broward counties. Okay. So it's just a realignment of which budget that goes into. So the we'll have a reduction in our budget, but the DCF will have an increase in their budget to offset it.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Fernandez-Barquin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it's not a question. I just wanted to commend you and thank you for funding the City of Opa-locka Police Station. For members who are not aware of the situation, what happened in the City of Opa-locka a couple of years ago was tragic. You basically had a whole group of commissioners who were committing a massive amounts of fraud.
Representative, is this a question or debate?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's actually more appropriate for debate. Should I just hold off on my comments until then? Yeah, okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, what we'll do is if there's any other questions, and then we'll open it for comments. It's technically not debate because there won't be a vote at the end of this. So are there any further questions? Okay, Representative Fernandez-Barquin, you're recognized for a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the City of Opa-locka, a lot of the commissioners, the mayor, there was a lot of fraud going on, unfortunately. And it was it was really the residents who got the short end of the stick in this situation. The police station is currently, I think, being operated out of a double wide trailer. And it's just, I greatly appreciate that the state is putting forth $1.8 million for the construction of their police station. And this is something that I've spoken extensively with Rep. James Bush about. I've met the chief of police for Opa-locka, and just thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Benjamin, you're recognized for a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I echo the sentiments of the good representative with regards to thanking the chair in regards to the providing funds for the Opa-locka Police Department. Just want to set the record straight that there's been no one was convicted of any fraud or anything as it relates to the previous board or commissioners of Opa-locka. So I do think, and I believe Opa-locka's current board would appreciate the monies given for their new police department, but no one was convicted of any fraud.
Thank you. Any other comments from members? Representative Fernandez-Barquin.
My apologies for any misrepresentation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments? Seeing no further comments, that'll complete the budget presentation for today. And with that, we'll go move to the handful of member bills we have up. First, we'll take up House Bill 1081, Involuntary Civil Commitment of Sexually Violent Predators by Representatives Persons Malika. Representatives Persons Malika, you are recognized to explain House Bill 1081.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members. It's an honor to be before you today to present House Bill 1101, Involuntary Civil Commitment of Sexually Violent Predators. Florida statutes provides for civil proceedings, which we often call Jimmy Rice cases, for the involuntary commitment of sexually violent predators. State attorneys handle these cases on behalf of the state. In a limited number of these Jimmy Rice cases, the competency of the respondent becomes an issue. While the respondent is not required to be competent to proceed in these Jimmy Rice civil cases, in the situation where the state is trying to commit someone based on evidence of prior bad acts that includes unchallenged or untested factual allegations, then the competency of the respondent has to first be restored so the respondent has a chance to respond adequately to that new evidence. The civil rules of procedure apply in these cases. However, they do not address how to proceed with competency issues. This bill seeks to set forth that procedural framework in that limited situation where the state wants to proceed with untested evidence. We have an amendment that we'll be presenting at the next committee stop that tightens up the language and ensures that it only applies in those very limited circumstances. As an example, in my home circuit, the 20th Judicial Circuit, we currently have 16 civil commitment cases pending, and in two of those cases, the issue of competency arose. This is basically creating that procedure to follow in statute based on what state attorneys are currently practicing today. And it adds consistency statewide and therefore should not have any type of significant fiscal impact whatsoever. Members, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. And at the beginning of your presentation, you referred to House Bill 1101. I think to set the record straight, we're talking about 1081.
My apologies, Mr. Chair, 1081.
So make sure we don't vote on the wrong thing. So, okay, we have no amendments. Any questions for members? Seeing no questions, we have no appearance cards. Any debate for members? Representative Rayner, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for this bill. I practice criminal defense. I don't do Jimmy Rice cases. I do have friends that do, and I know it's a little bit of the wild, wild west over in the Jimmy Rice courts. So I do thank you for, with your bill, attempting to try to bring some procedure and some clarity and some streamlining when it comes to competency issues, as they are significant in this area of the law. So I do appreciate you for bringing forth this bill.
Vice Chair Caruso, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to thank the representative for bringing the bill forward and for her working me through my questions and comments that I had. And, the bill does provide a procedural framework and which is badly needed in this arena. So thank you again. I'll be up on the bill.
Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Persons Malika, you're recognized to close on House Bill 1081.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will ask for your support on House Bill 1081 today. Thank you, members.
Nicely done. Representative Persons Malika, having closed on the bill, Amara, please call the roll.
Chair Plakin.
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso.
Yes.
Representatives Beltran.
Yes.
Benjamin.
Yes.
Byrd.
Yes.
Davis.
Yes.
DeSegli.
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin.
Yes.
Garrison.
Yes.
Gregory.
Yes.
Learned.
Yes.
Mello.
Yes.
Rayner.
Yes.
Sabatini.
Yes.
14 yeas, zero nays, Mr. Chair.
We'll report that favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, members.
Okay, next up we'll go to CS for House Bill 1541-1541, Use of Electronic Databases, by Representative Trunow. You're recognized.
Good morning, Chair and members. CS HB 1541 is a pretty simple bill. Government employees have access to various electronic databases that contain an extensive amount of personal and confidential information. The bill requires state law enforcement to get some education on this information and how they can use the information. It requires them to have accelerated or recurring education on it, and it increases the fines for violations of the information. That is the bill.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for members? Seeing no questions, and we have no amendments, I should add, and we have no public testimony. Anybody out there wanted to speak to it? Seeing none. Any debate for members? Seeing no debate, you recognize to close.
Way close, Chair.
Representative Trunow, having closed, Amara, please call the roll.
Chair Plakin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Byrd?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Fernandez Barquin?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
14 yeas, zero nays.
We'll be reporting that favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Next up, CS for House Bill 885, Juvenile Justice Programs in Detention by Representative Placencia, and Representative Byrd will be presenting on behalf of Representative Placencia. Representative Byrd, you're recognized to explain CS for House Bill 885.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as you indicated, I'm presenting this bill on behalf of Representative Placencia, and this is the DJJ agency bill. In 2020, the General Appropriations Act implementing bill temporarily created the Accountability and Program Support Program within DJJ and renamed the Prevention and Victim Services Program to Prevention because victim services have not been provided through DJJ in many years and are offered instead through the AG's and state attorney's offices. These changes will expire in July of this year. The bill permanently establishes the Accountability and Program Support Program and permanently renames the Prevention Program. The bill ensures that only a non-fiscally restrained county that does not provide its own juvenile detention care contributes 50% of the detention costs. The bill removes language relating to detention cost sharing that is no longer relevant and repeals Section 985.686 because the cost sharing provided under the section is now governed in another statute. The bill also provides that a court may only place a child who willfully fails to appear in court and secure detention for up to 24 hours before a detention hearing if the court first obtains sufficient information from DJJ to determine that the child's failure to appear was willful and not merely due to circumstances out of the child's control. It also requires each judicial circuit to develop a written plan in consultation with judges, state attorneys, public defenders, and law enforcement agencies for determining appropriate sanctions when a child commits a technical violation of probation. That is a bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Byrd. We have no amendments, so we'll go right to questions from members. Any questions from members? Seeing none, we have some public testimony. First up, Candace Brower with the Criminal Conflict and Civil Regional Council, Region 1. You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, so much for indulging me on this. I have not met all of you, but I look forward to it. I am the regional counsel for the First District Court of Appeals Region of Florida. That's 32 counties. There's five of us in the state. And I'm sorry, most of you probably already know what we do, and we are used to, I know Representative Rayner, I'm sure, knows what we do, but we were created in 2007, so we're kind of used to a little bit of oversight there. And this year, Representative Brandon filed a bill for us to be included where the public defenders are included and state attorneys, because we've become just an essential part of the judicial system, just like the public defenders, just like the state attorneys, and we're the money-saving arm as well. So we have spoken to the sponsor of this bill, and it's a wonderful bill. And I am a board-certified juvenile lawyer. I've created five other board-certified juvenile lawyers in my agency because we represent juveniles just like the public defender does. So we want to be at the table if they're talking about sanctions for children, and we've asked to be included in this bill, and of course the sponsor was wonderfully open to it, and I'm looking forward to meeting all of you. And Representative Maney read my mind at the last stop it came to, which is why I knew I was going to come up here next time it came up, and asked why aren't the regional councils in this bill? So I'm very pleased that the attention was brought to it, and I just thank you all so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, Samuel Kearse, Department of Juvenile Justice.
Department of Juvenile Justice, please.
Thank you. Next up, Christian Miner, Florida Juvenile Justice Association. He waves in support. Any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate. Representative Byrd, you're recognized to close on CS for House Bill 885.
Wave close, Mr. Chairman.
Let's call the roll.
Chair Plankin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Caruso?
Yes.
Representatives Beltran?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
Byrd?
Yes.
Davis?
Yes.
DeSegley?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Garrison?
Yes.
Gregory?
Yes.
Learned?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Rayner?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Mr. Chair.
We'll report that favorably, and thank you for everyone and participation both before today and today on the budget in particular. This will conclude our agenda for today. Any further business for the committee? Seeing none, Representative Rayner moves we rise without objection. The meeting's adjourned.